By late 1986, Stoll had settled into a routine based on the hacker's movements. Every time the hacker appeared, Stoll's pocket pager sounded. Whatever the time of day, and wherever he was, in the shower, on his bicycle, sitting down to breakfast, Stoll would drop everything, call TimeNet to start a trace, then run to a computer, log on to the LBL system, and watch the intrusion. But the hacker wouldn't stay on the line long enough for a trace to be completed. One Saturday in early December, Stoll came a step closer. A TimeNet trace showed one of the calls coming from a transatlantic satellite, and to the satellite from the DATEX-P network in West Germany. From somewhere in Germany, it seemed, the hacker called into DATEX-P, asked for TimeNet, and then connected to U.S. computers. By now, Stoll was locked in a Faustian embrace with the CIA, the National Security Agency, the FBI, the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, and the Defense Intelligence Agency. But even as he probed his conscience, he was caught up in the excitement. As far as Stoll was concerned, any international links to the hacker smacked of intrigue. He envisioned spies muttering to one another in darkened alleys. Yet back in Berkeley, there wasn't much he could do. For all his vigilance, he was powerless. His success in tracing the hacking depended entirely upon the cooperation he got from those authorized to do the tracing. He kept watching the hacker's every move. The wheels of the establishment forces turned slowly. All Stoll could do was conjure up his own visions of the other side and try to minimize the damage. If the hacker began to delete files or tamper with a system, Stoll could use the Unix kill command to disconnect him immediately. And when the hacker seemed to be getting into computers containing sensitive information, or tried to download sensitive files, or what Stoll could only surmise were sensitive files, Stoll employed a low-tech but effective solution. He took his keys from his pocket and dangled them next to the wires connected to the hacker's line, shorting out the circuit for just an instant. To the hacker, it looked as if his connection was being interrupted by a simple line noise, and he would try again. Again came the keys. Eventually, the hacker would give up. The next step was to trace the call within Germany. Stoll stood by as the network experts at TimeNet negotiated with the Bundespost authorities to put on the trace. Finally, he got word that the call had been made from the University of Bremen. The German authorities informed the university that its computer systems were being infiltrated by an outsider. Flustered by the news, the university shut down all outside connections for 3 weeks. But that didn't seem to stop the hacker. The next trace showed he was coming from Hanover, but even that wasn't conclusive proof that he was a German. Who was to say that Hanover wasn't just a computer stopover from a flight that started in Botswana, Islamabad, or anywhere at all? The only way to continue the trace was to get a search warrant, and that meant negotiating an agreement between American and West German authorities. For Stoll, it meant more waiting. The new year, 1987, came and went. Stoll's frustration was mounting. As a research scientist, he knew all too well the virtues of patience, but this research project had yet to yield any results. His main constraint was his utter dependence on outside authorities and their cooperation. And the fact that foreign authorities were now involved could only complicate matters.